This is a war between the government and the Tamil people.
I'm not a fucking terrorist. You are the terrorist.
People are crying out for justice in this country.
If you've got to be militant to achieve your aims and your aspirations, so be it.
There's a real hypocrisy from the big corporations.
The people from below will push for real change.
This Australia is going to be shocked, and then the public will say, what the hell's going on?
Welcome to the Indie Media Show on RTRFM 92.1. Before we get started, a huge thank you to Jeff for another excellent edition of On The Record. He'll be back next Monday to kick you off with all the interviews for your Monday morning. But of course, you can catch On The Record every weekday here at RTRFM from 9 in the AM. As I said, though, this is the Indie Media Show. That's the news, views and interviews from the open publishing wires of the interwebs. My name is Raymond Grenfell. Joining me in the studio is Brahma, keeping up the positive vibes. On this week's program, we're going to be taking a bit of a look at the Scarborough Gas Hub development. It's an issue we have covered a few times on the show, but things are definitely heating up, especially in terms of opposition. Last week, three protesters were charged over a demonstration in WA's north when they blocked access to the country's largest LNG hub for more than 12 hours. The activists locked onto some devices in a caravan and in a four-wheel drive, blocking the main sort of road to the LNG hub where the Scarborough Gas Hub is proposed. Scarborough Gas Hub itself, if it is constructed, will be one of the largest polluters in the southern hemisphere. Somewhat, I think it's something about 10 times larger than the proposed Adani coal mine. So a group of activists went up there and they blocked access to this gas hub, causing a bit of disruption for the day. There's also been actions in the city and a rally in Karratha itself, where a bunch of traditional owners and their supporters gathered to voice their opposition to the project. So to find out about that, today we're going to be hearing from a few people. We're going to be chatting to Petrina, who was one of the people involved in the action up north, who was one of the people who locked on to a device and restricted access to the site for about 12 hours. But we're also going to be talking to Auntie Josie Alec and Raylene Cooper, who were at the Save Our Songlines rally up in Karratha. So we'll be getting their perspective on it as well. And as well as that, we're going to be talking about a bill that's being debated in Victoria at the moment. The Victorian government is currently debating the Sex Work Decriminalisation Bill 2021 in Parliament. And we're going to be hearing from a member of the Scarlet Alliance, the Union for Sex Workers over there, to hear a bit about why decriminalisation is, I guess, the right step and something that a lot of people are supporting. So lots of reasons to keep it locked to Indie Media this morning. Up first, though, we're going to go to a track by Idols off their recent release, the Crawler release, and this is Progress on RTRFM 92.1. This is the Indie Media Show.
This is a war between the government and the Tamil people.
I'm not a fucking terrorist. You are the terrorist.
People are crying out for justice in this country.
If you've got to be militant to achieve your aims and your aspirations, so be it.
There's a real hypocrisy from the big corporations.
The people from below will push for real change.
This Australia is going to be shocked, and then the public will say, what the hell's going on?
And this is the Indie Media Show. Three protesters have been charged over a demonstration in WA's north that blocked access to our biggest LNG hub for more than 12 hours. The protesters locked themselves to concrete barrels and used a car and caravan to block access to the Burrup Peninsula near Karratha early Wednesday morning. They were demonstrating against last week's announcement from Woodside that it will press ahead with its $16.5 billion Scarborough gas project. To find out about what exactly happened early that Wednesday morning and why the activists were taking direct action, I had the opportunity a little earlier today to catch up with one of those that locked themselves on and took direct action against the Scarborough Gas Hub, Petrina. And I started by asking Petrina exactly what took place early Wednesday morning.
We drove a caravan and a car onto a road, the only road in and out of the Burrup Hub Peninsula project that included Scarborough Gas, Karratha Gas, the LNG fertiliser plant and Dampier Port. So yeah, we parked the caravan there, and then two people inside the caravan, myself and Liz, were sitting in the caravan. We had our arms in PVC pipe cemented into a barrel, which was lowered onto the road when we parked the caravan, and another protector was lying underneath the car with his arm in a similar concrete barrel that was sunk into the wheel well, you know, where the spare tyre goes. Yeah, with the intent of stopping operations at Scarborough Gas, just to raise awareness of the massive project that is about to happen. Unfortunately, the action was planned supposedly before Woodside made their final investment decision. However, they did that early. Perdaman provided a lot of the investment, and so by the time we got up there, they had already made the decision to go ahead. But we felt the action was still vital in, you know, drawing attention to this project, which a lot of people still are completely unaware of. And I think if more people knew about it, then, yeah, more people would be completely up in arms.
Yeah, now, I guess outside of raising awareness, it was very effective in actually shutting down the LNG hub. As I said, it, you know, really for the whole day, people were unable to get in and out. Kind of reminiscent, I guess, of some of the actions that happened around James Price Point and, of course, throughout Australia, this sort of this direct action. I mean, in that sense, I guess it was quite effective. But how did people respond up there? How did the workers respond? And obviously, Woodside have kind of went on the offensive, saying that you're putting workers' health and safety at risk and this kind of thing. But can you tell us a bit about, you know, from that perspective, the, you know, how it sort of functioned and worked as a direct action to actually, you know, shut the LNG hub down for the day?
So the actions, what happens, we had police liaisons and people to meet the workers coming to work and de-escalate any kind of aggression. To be honest, the workers, fair enough, were, you know, quite frustrated at missing work, but we had some comments like, look, I know the position you're taking, but I just have a job to do. Response to workers is that, you know, absolutely, we understand people have to put food on the table, but the bigger picture is that, you know, corporations like Woodside themselves are not looking after their workers. You know, the bigger picture is that the rest of the world is divesting from fossil fuels. You know, COP26 saw the kind of, well, pathetic, it was, you know, a lot of talk. But there was, you know, still talk of we have to reduce emissions and globally we have to work together to reduce emissions. And, you know, the Australian government, it was literally sticking a finger up to the whole process. They went with the view that, you know, we're not going to divest, we're going to keep using gas. Gas is a, you know, cleaner, gas is a way to transition. The Australian stand they had at COP26 was outrageous. It was, you know, sponsored by Santos. So they literally showed they have no intention of following along with the rest of the world. And in terms of workers, this is detrimental to them because ultimately no one's going to be buying our filthy fossil fuels soon. So the workers' jobs are at risk. They're not safe. Woodside blaming us for putting people's lives at danger is absolutely not hilarious, hypocritical, in that, you know, their project will release 1.7 billion tonnes of toxic emissions when, you know, the world is trying to reduce emissions. Scientists around the world have said we can have no new, you know, fossil fuel projects if we are to, you know, stop to not reach the 1.5 degree global warming, which is literally the tipping point, where they're saying beyond that, you know, we're going to be facing vast extremes in weather, so more bushfires, you know, extreme cyclones, hurricanes, floods, the lots, you know, that's the danger that we are standing up against. You know, we have to stop projects like this if we are going to avoid this 1.5 degree of global warming.
Now, McGowan has come out really strongly in favour of this project. It's very much a part of the state's gas-led recovery. He's even suggested that when the Conservation Council of WA, if they're successful in their Supreme Court challenge to the environmental approvals of this project, that he and his state government may even intervene. And it really seems as though he's really pushing for it. He's argued that, you know, gas is a sustainable solution, that if we're exporting gas to China and India and they're burning our gas, that's going to be better than them burning coal. What are your feelings on the state government's just absolute support, like unconditional support for this project? And what does it say about the current state of politics that, you know, a supposedly more progressive party like the ALP are just going, you know, full steam ahead with their support for the Scarborough Gas Hub?
This is why we lock on. This is why people block roads, because our government are completely in the pocket of fossil fuel, you know, industry. companies like Woodside, Chevron, BHPs of this world, they donate hundreds of thousands to both Liberal and Labor parties. They don't care whoever gets in because then it's business as usual. You know, that money buys ministers' ears, it buys ministers' approvals. And this is, yeah, this is absolutely just about the profits and the finances of the few, the tiny few who will benefit. And there's short-term profits and short-term jobs. And, you know, when it's all done and dusted, masses of pollution put back out into the air and people will suffer. And, yeah, the absolute arrogance of McGowan to come out and say, well, I don't care if, the, you know, the court finds in favour, if they find the environmental damage is too much. Too bad. We will just write legislation and override the, you know, the court's decision and go ahead anyway. And as I say, this is why we lock on. You know, people say there's other ways to protest. We're absolutely covering all the other ways to protest, you know, this court case and all the other spot actions that have been going around in Perth. But McGowan's response shows that they just do not care about people's lives. They will prioritise their profits every single time. They will prioritise the needs of their donors and, yeah, not the needs of the people.
Patrina, as you said, that there are other actions, and this is, you know, it's not just about people locking on. There have been rallies. There have been, I guess, the beginnings of a growing movement against the Scarborough gas hub. I guess for our listeners, if they are concerned about this, perhaps they're only just becoming aware of it, what can they do? How can they get involved in this campaign? And do you foresee it becoming a significant campaign, perhaps, as I mentioned earlier, similar to that around the James Price Point campaign and, you know, opposing that project? Do you foresee it becoming like that? And, you know, how can we make it a campaign that gets to that stage?
Yeah, absolutely. This is the reason I felt compelled to take part in this particular action, because there's a huge momentum building. You know, I personally have been campaigning against this project for, you know, the last 2 years. We've had stalls in Perth, regular stalls, like information stalls, trying to get people aware of, you know, the damages gas does, and to, you know, fight the propaganda put out by the government that it's all clean and it's part of a transition and, you know, they're trying to reduce emissions. So, yeah, having campaigned against Woodside, as I said, for 2 years here in Perth, you know, the opportunity to go and sit at the very heart and see where it's all happening, yeah, I just had to do it. But other people can get involved. There's a website, Stop Scarborough Gas. There's also 350.org, which have excellent information about, you know, the IPCC report and the Clean State report and, you know, the facts about this project. So, yeah, that's probably the first port of call. Get onto the Stop Scarborough Gas website and then you can find out about petitions, other spot actions. And people need to realise this is all non-violent direct action stuff and they don't have to take part in that. As I said, there's plenty of ways to get involved. Just getting the education out there is probably the main best way we can hope to get more people on board. You mentioned James Price. I mean, Liz Burrows, who locked on with me, she was at that campaign as well. She spent about a year doing similar actions and, you know, they won. James Price Point is now still a pristine camping, fishing spot. The families go, there's thriving businesses. Funnily enough, I spoke to a policeman while I was waiting to go into court the next morning. And, you know, he grew up in Broome and around there and said exactly that. He grew up as a kid, James Price Point, then took his own kids there. He says now, you know, his grandkids, his kids take their kids. His brother has a thriving eco-cultural tour business. Yeah, that's the thing to aspire to. You know, Woodside, would, if they'd got hold of that, it would just be another huge polluting scar on the landscape.
This is a war between the government and the Tamil people.
I'm not a fucking terrorist. You are the terrorist.
People are crying out for justice in this country.
If you've got to be militant to achieve your aims and your aspirations, so be it.
There's a real hypocrisy from the big corporations.
The people from below will push for real change.
This Australia is going to be shocked, and then the public will say, what the hell's going on?
So I was quite inspired by the fact, you know, this was part of that successful campaign. It proves that, you know, people power and active protest does work.
That was Patrina speaking to us earlier today. She's from the Stop Scarborough Gas Hub Alliance. You can find out more at Stop Scarborough Gas. Look that one up. This is the Indie Media Show on RTRFM 92.1. Shortly we're going to hear from a couple of the traditional owners in the area who are also concerned about the Scarborough Gas Hub development. On RTRFM 92.1, The Sound Alternative.
This is a war between the government and the Tamil people.
I'm not a fucking terrorist. You are the terrorist.
People are crying out for justice in this country.
If you've got to be militant to achieve your aims and your aspirations, so be it.
There's a real hypocrisy from the big corporations.
The people from below will push for real change.
This Australia is going to be shocked, and then the public will say, what the hell's going on?
And you're on the Indie Media Show on RTRFM 92.1. We're going to continue our conversation about the proposed Scarborough Gas Hub, as on the weekend there was a protest organised opposing Woodside's Scarborough Gas Hub. The protest was in Karratha and was called by the Mutarrina and Nyalama traditional owners, the Save Our Song Lines protest. Jesse Noakes, Indie Media's Jesse Noakes, was there and he was able to chat to two of the traditional owners, Auntie Josie Alec and Auntie Raylene Cooper.
Josie Alec is a Gudama and Mutatunya woman and a traditional healer who lives in Karratha. This weekend, following Woodside's final investment decision to proceed with the Scarborough Gas Project, she organised the Save Our Songlines rally, the first local protest about industrial developments on the Burrup in more than a decade. I spoke with Josie just beforehand to discuss her concerns about Scarborough Gas and what it would mean for her Noora or country.
Okay, so the rally is basically just on behalf of the elders to, you know, get their voices out about, you know, the importance of the cultural heritage of our song lines and the importance of the rock art and, you know, everything about putting more stuff on there is not very good, I suppose.
Yeah. So what is the kind of, what's the core message that you're sending?
Our core message today is basically through our hearts, you know, and it's to get, you know, we want to bring everybody together in the same message that this message is for Mother Earth. This message is for her. This message, and by bringing everybody together on one issue about helping her sustainability and everybody's connection to Mother Earth and the importance of our creation story out there and the importance of the connection that our old people left us, you know, through our hearts is what we want to connect everybody to today. And, you know, when we've got so many people in one spot that are generating so much love and life force in one place and with the right intent, with that same intent, we can move mountains and people will hear us, you know, our elders will hear us. And you know, I'm really excited because I know they're going to be with us today. And I know that our elders here now, you know, are here and they're strong and they're going to start speaking up.
Yeah, beautiful. Yeah. The shirt you're wearing says, Save Our Songlines, Stop Scarborough Gas. Can you tell us about the impact you think Scarborough Gas is going to have on the heritage and the culture and the songlines?
Yeah. Sorry, I've got to take a breath because it's really overwhelming to think about the impact that it has culturally and spiritually on myself, but also culturally and spiritually on, again, the plants, the animals, the, you know, the everything. I do bush medicine, so when I go out there and I go out to the country and I can see that it's out of whack, it's not right, and it's hurting, and I can feel it's hurting. And when I feel that hurt, all I know, I've just, you know, I've got to give it the love. I need it. And we need to really just give it as much love as we can possibly now while we're going through a time of change around the world and the impact of climate change. And, you know, everyone's sort of waking up to the fact that clean air is what we're gonna actually need in the future, not acid rain pouring on us and pouring on our animals and plants and the rock art that's been there for thousands and thousands of years, millions of years, in fact, you know, from when the world was soft in our dreamtime stories. That's what's important, and that's what holds all value and respect and commitment and anything that you can think of that's positive in this world for change. That's what it is that we're trying to bring today through our hearts. that connection to everybody and to everybody's hearts for their kids' sake.
Can you tell us what it's like going out on the Burrup and being out there with the rock art and knowing and seeing just a few hundred metres away all the industry, the gas and the fertiliser plants and everything pumping emissions that you can literally see hundreds of metres away from Deep Gorge and other places where rock art has been there for, as you say, at least tens of thousands of years, documenting the oldest living culture that's still here and still connected to country out there?
Yeah, it's... Look, I look over and you can feel it. You feel it, you smell it, it's all around you, but, you know, we, as Ngururrpa people, we learn to help Mother Earth and protect her in every single way that we can, and that's the reasoning why we, you know, I go out with a heavy heart, but I come back knowing that my heavy heart can also enlighten and enlighten with everybody, with the country. When I look up and I see, you know, big company like Woodside and, you know, the Yarras and the big multinational companies, they're all out there. And I see them and I just think, wow, you know, our old people walked that country and they had their own pathways. They had their own song lines that directed them to keep the world sustainable and to keep life sustainable.
So the rally that you've organised today is... This, how long has it been since there's been something like this up here in Karratha, do you reckon?
Oh, look, I can't remember a time when we've had a rally. You know, when my big sister was around, I know that she rallied out there and she rallied it with the elders as well, and that's nearly 20 years.
Yeah. Why is it happening now, do you think? Why is it kind of 20 years later? Why has it come to a crunch point now?
It's time. It's time.
Yeah.
Mother Earth is calling us. She needs our help as much as we need hers.
Yeah. And it's that call that's motivated you, that's moved you to organise this today and bring everyone together?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
For the people, you know, even for our own people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what's your message to people who can't be at the rally in Karratha, people elsewhere in Western Australia or people in Australia about what you're organising here and about how the community here in the Pilbara, the Mardudhunera people and the Ngalama people and the Injibandi people and the Wongatu and the Yabara, what can the rest of the country do to help elevate their voices, do you think, and listen to them more on this issue?
I think just listen and really hear what's going on. There is a lot of stuff going on and there are always two sides to a story, you know, and just use your own heart to guide yourself through what you know is real and you know, and what you think is real and maybe what you feel is real. So,
yeah.
You know, this is a heart call. This is a heart-centered call about everyone's heart and connecting it to, you know, Mother Earth, and to once we're connected, then we can start to repair, you know, the lines of communication. We can start to repair, you know, the way that we speak to each other, the way we look at each other as human beings, you know, not as race, not as anything, just as human beings, as beautiful as every single one of us are. That's what we need to get out.
Raylene Cooper also spoke at the rally. Raylene is a Mardudhunera woman and a director of the Murujuga Aboriginal Corporation.
My heart is very heavy. You know, bringing and sharing the information with a lot of our people and families in particular, it's very concerning. And even more so that finding more information in regards to this and hearing the experts telling us over and over again, it's got to be an eye-opener somewhere. Someone's going to start going, hey, there's something really wrong going on here. As far as the approvals with the Scarborough, I believe totally approvals have been pushed forward really, really fast. And I believe that there's been underhanded work that's been done we as Ngarawa people are always the last ones to know.
What would you like to say to the government?
It's time you come to the table and start talking the truth. Government, you are not above the law. Woodside, you are not above the law. And it is a crime what you have done, because we don't know the truth. Yet the truth is coming out. As an up-and-coming emerging elder, I have a responsibility for my family and my traditions, and I certainly have a responsibility for that Ngora, because it was bestowed on us. We are the custodians. We have every right to plead and talk to everybody. This concerns us all, every single person that lives on this planet.
Raylene Cooper there, and before her, Josie Alec, both traditional custodians of the Burrup and co-organisers of the Save Our Songlines rally that was held in Karratha last Saturday to voice concerns and opposition from traditional custodians to Woodside's planned Scarborough Gas Project.
That was Jesse Noakes, Indie Media's Jesse Noakes, speaking to Raylene Cooper and Josie Alec, to traditional owners and aunties in our state's north. And this is the Indie Media Show on RTRFM 92.1.
This is a war between the government and the Tamil people.
I'm not a fucking terrorist. You are the terrorist.
People are crying out for justice in this country.
If you've got to be militant to achieve your aims and your aspirations, so be it.
There's a real hypocrisy from the big corporations.
The people from below will push for real change.
This Australia is going to be shocked, and then the public will say, what the hell's going on?
And this is the Indie Media Show. My name is Raymond Grenfell. Joining me in the studio is Brahma, keeping up the positive vibes. Now, legislation to decriminalise sex work and improve the lives of sex workers is making its way through Victorian Parliament. Indie Media's Joni Boyd chatted to Jules Kim, the CEO of the Scarlet Alliance, the peak body for sex worker rights in Australia. Joni started by asking Jules Kim exactly what does Scarlet Alliance do?
Yeah, so Scarlet Alliance is the Australian Sex Workers Association. We're the national peak organisation, and we represent our membership of sex workers and sex worker organisations throughout Australia. We were formed in 1989, and we have members in every state and territory, including, you know, obviously in WA. And we work on, ensuring sex workers have access to equity, you know, social, political, economic justice, and to and freedom to choose how and where we work.
Yeah, and so you cover like all forms of sex work, like independent staff, like street staff, online.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's many different forms of sex work, and I think that's something that a lot of people get often confused about. But obviously, there's a lot of diverse forms of sex work, and you know, and sex workers ourselves are very diverse as well.
There's supposedly an effort to decriminalise sex work in Victoria. So under the current system that's been in place there and in a lot of other jurisdictions around the country, what are some of the dangers and issues that sex workers face?
Yeah, so, you know, unfortunately we do actually have different laws in every state and territory.
Right.
And we also have different laws for the different types of sex work. So there'll be different laws for escort versus brothel-based work versus street-based work, you know, versus private work. So there's a really complex range of laws that impact sex workers that vary from state to state. New South Wales was one of the first, was the first place in the world to decriminalise sex work. And then we had...
That was back in like the mid-90s or something, wasn't it?
Yeah, correct, 1995. And that was basically as a result of the Woodwell Commission that found widespread police corruption in the sex industry. And sex workers had been advocating for decriminalisation. And fortunately, at that time, the government recognised, looked at different models of regulation and recognised that licensing, as is currently in place in Victoria, would replicate the same harms, because essentially police are still the main regulators of the sex industry. So whereas decriminalisation, you know, by contrast, has been successful in eliminating corruption within the sex industry and also, you know, has resulted in positive workplace health and safety outcomes. So since that time, there's been growing support for decriminalisation. This is something that sex workers have been calling for. We've had growing support from the United Nations bodies such as UNAIDS and UNFPA and UNDP and Amnesty International, the World Health Organization, and the list goes on and on, recognizing that decriminalization is the best practice model for sex industry regulation from a range of perspectives, from, you know, a human rights perspective, from a public health perspective, from a workplace health and safety perspective. So last year, mid-last year, NT, Northern Territory, decriminalized, also implemented decriminalization. And then we received the great news that Victoria was also moving forward, and the bill that passed the lower house a couple of weeks back, and that in the upper house at the moment.
Well, yeah, that is fantastic. Like, what are some of the things that, like, for example, this legislation in Victoria gets right?
Yeah, look, I mean, it's the licensing framework. So I think people kind of often get really confused between the concept of decriminalisation and what's often referred to as legal.
Yeah, give us a rundown of the difference between those two.
Yeah, sure. So legalisation, or we'd probably more accurately describe it as licensing or over-regulation.
Right.
And basically when sex work is licensed, what's happened in practice as well is that the majority of the sex industry are unable to comply with the onerous kind of, you know, licensing framework, and are forced to kind of operate outside of that, and therefore are considered illegal. So it, by its very nature, creates an illegal sector, you know. So
which most of the industry falls under.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, in, like, for example, in Queensland, you know, I think about 90% of the industry fall outside the licensed sector. In all the years that licensing was operated, there's only been just over 20 brothels that have been licensed. And so, you know, and obviously there's more than 20 brothels in the whole of Queensland, but, you know, it's, the system itself is very unworkable, and it's incredibly costly, and it continues to cost the government a lot of money to maintain. And basically what it means is that the police are still the main regulators of the sex industry. Also, in the licensing system, it's also like registration, system of registration, which basically forces sex workers to have a lifelong record. Like, you can never get your name off that register. So it stays on there forever, like even after you die. And because we know, because of the fact that we have different laws in different states and territories, and we also, you know that the stigma and discrimination against sex workers is incredibly high, that basically those registration records have been used against sex workers in incredibly harmful ways.
So, right.
You know, child custody cases, and in when somebody is seeking to work in another job, or if they're traveling, you know, if they want to travel, so some countries you can't travel to if you are a sex worker. So it has a really real negative impact. What is really great about the Victoria model is that they are seeking to repeal the licensing system.
What are some of the ways that it falls short of your demands?
Well, disappointingly, it still has provisions in there that effectively criminalise street-based sex workers. And currently under the licensing system in Victoria, street-based sex work is criminalised and illegal. And what that means is that we routinely see police entrapping sex workers, so, you know, posing as clients, and it results in street-based sex workers kind of prioritise police invasion over their health and safety.
Yep.
So it's a massive problem. And, you know, the Victorian government recognised that this was a problem, and, you know, in the bill they even stated that that they recognise that, you know, that the criminalisation of street-based sex work is harmful and creating massive barriers for street-based sex workers to be able to report a crime against them.
There's still plenty of ways for the cops to be heavy-handed in the way that they, you know, police these laws.
Yeah, well, the problem is that instead of removing the criminalisation offences entirely, they've, in the bill, they're proposing, instead of removing it entirely, that they'll keep it in place in certain locations during certain times. Basically, still a massive problem because it still, you know, maintains police in the lives of street-based sex workers. So the proposal is that during certain hours, street-based sex workers can't happen in certain locations. So, like, within, near or in view of a church, school, there's a range of places. It's basically from the morning until 7 p.m. at night.
Right. So, I imagine that the police and other law enforcement could draw a broad view of that area that's around the church or the school, for instance.
Well, that's right. And it's near, which is not actually defined in the legislation. So it is very discretionary, and we know that these kind of, unfortunately, these kind of provisions impact on, you know, police more heavily for more visible and targeted sex workers, like sex workers of colour and, you know, trans sex workers.
Absolutely.
So it's also really strange as well, because there's this assumption that sex work only happens at night, and somehow it's not okay at 6:59, but it's okay at 7:01. You know,
it's not like you're going to be looking for clients like directly out the front of a church. That's exactly. Not exactly the best place to advertise your services.
Exactly. I mean, we know that in practice that's not what happens. But the issue is that it maintains that, you know, the policing and penalisation and criminalisation of street-based sex workers. I mean, the other part that's a problem as well is that the government has recognised that the registration, which I spoke about earlier, is a problem, and that they're going to no longer require sex workers to be registered. However, instead of, usually when that happens, like, so when that happened in the Northern Territory, they ended the registration system, and then there was a provision in the Act to destroy the register, so that people wouldn't be negatively impacted by having been registered.
Because that would be great.
Yeah, exactly. So, but in this bill, they're ending the registration system, but they're not actually seeking to destroy the register. So it means that people who are currently registered are still going to be impacted by those registration records, which is obviously a big problem. So that's another part of the bill that we would really like to see changed. And there's also another section that is also a massive issue, the notion of forced sex work. And there's a provision that basically says that if you supply or offer to supply somebody with drugs, that's considered to be forcing somebody to do sex work. I think that's obviously a massive problem. We know that, the fact of drugs or any reward in exchange for sex to be considered, forced sex work is a massive issue. So we're seeking to get that also amended.
Yeah. So finally, what can our listeners do to lend a hand?
Yeah, look, I mean, I think contacting Victorian members to state that, you know, that they support decriminalisation of sex work, that these provisions must change in order to, so that everyone, all sex workers, are able to benefit from decriminalisation, including those who were previously registered, and including street-based sex workers.
That was Jules Kim, the CEO of the Scarlet Alliance, speaking to Indie Media's Joni Boyd about moves to decriminalise sex work in Victoria. And that's about all we have time for this week's edition of the Indie Media Show. We'll be back next week at 11 a.m. In the meantime, you can always restream the program at rtrfm.com.au. You can hit us up via the RTRFM offices or the corporate social media platforms if you so wish. And otherwise, we'll be back at 11 a.m.
This is a war between the government and the Tamil people.
I'm not a fucking terrorist. You are the terrorist.
People are crying out for justice in this country.
If you've got to be militant to achieve your aims and your aspirations, so be it.
There's a real hypocrisy from the big corporations.
The people from below will push for real change.
This Australia is going to be shocked, and then the public will say, what the hell's going on?